So Jordan told me that there was a debate amongst some people he was talking about last week's sermon. Was that a sermon 3 weeks ahead of Father's Day on the topic of fathers and men? Or was that one of three lessons that will go consecutively leading up to Father's Day? And there's nothing a preacher loves more than to realize that he was so unclear that people didn't even know how many sermons he was going to give. So, let me clear it up. This is the second of three lessons on masculinity. We will have one more that will finish it up on Father's Day. This one I titled Stumbling into Success, How Men Can Learn to Fail Forward. And I labeled it that because I believe that's what the journey actually looks like. And it's not just my opinion. I think that's what you see throughout the Bible. It is true for men and women, but in particular, I think for men, we need to understand that this process of becoming a successful man is not a linear one. It is not something where you just wake up and you make one good choice, which will be followed by another consecutive good choice, which will be followed by another, and it's like some sort of perfect linear movement upward and onward. That's not it at all. It is much more likely that your life will be prone to failure and heartache and to tragedy, but what you do with those things will absolutely make all the difference. It has been said, and I believe it is correct, that the one unifying human thing is suffering. It's not fun to talk about, it's certainly not popular, but the truth is that everybody has shared the experience of suffering. Not everybody has shared the experience of joy, but everybody has shared the experience of suffering. But in a world of suffering, if a man can learn to take responsibility for himself and then to go one step further, to begin to take responsibility not just for his own behavior in his own life, but take it one step further and take responsibility for those around him, for his children, for his family, for the family tree that will extend out of that family unit. If a man can do that, he can change everything. But he won't do it without stumbling along the way. He won't do it without failure. Those things are an inevitable part of the process. There is no way to work around them. You just simply must go through them. In 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, it says, "When David's time to die drew near," this is King David, "he commanded Solomon his son, saying, 'I'm about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man.'" This is that one of multiple Bible examples of an older man turning to a younger man, oftentimes his son, and saying, "I'm about to leave this earth, and you're going to have to step into a role you've not been in before, and this is how you do it. This is what I've learned, and I want you to know as you head into it." The hope of every older generation is that the one that's coming up after them would not make the same mistakes they did, but might learn a thing the easy way instead of the hard way. And so too it was with David. As the lawn is about to get mowed and he's about to be chopped off the top and Solomon comes up next, he says, "Look, I'm about to go the way of all the earth." This happens to everybody. "But you be strong and you show yourself a man." What does that look like? There are several passages that we're going to key off of to get this idea of what does it look like for a man to live a successful life. And each of these three passages I'm going to show you are a older man to a younger man. Now, in this case, this first one, Jehovah is going to say to Joshua, and it is God's words, but it'll be through the mouthpiece of Moses. Moses, who is an older man, will say, "This is what God says," and he's going to pass down to Joshua as Moses is going to leave the earth. Moses will say, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." This is the final statement made to Joshua when it was time for the grass to be mowed. Moses is leaving and Joshua is going to rise up. Likewise, David says to Solomon, "Be strong and courageous and do it. Do not be afraid and do not be dismayed, for the Lord God, even my God, is with you. And then the last one you look at is Paul and Timothy. So we have a Moses and Joshua situation where there is a mentor to an apprentice, you might say. A David to Solomon, which is an older king to a younger king. And there's a biological connection of a father to son. And then Paul to Timothy, which is also a mentorship sort of apprentice relationship between those two. And Paul will say to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1, "For this reason I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control." What I want you to see is that there's actually a recipe in these three things. There's quite a lot of overlap between these three older men speaking to these three younger men. And it tells us this is a consistent recipe we find throughout the Bible, a God-given recipe that men can look at and say, how do I live a life where I'm moving the direction that the Lord intended me as a man to do? How do I do it in my job? How do I do it in my marriage? How do I do it with my kids? How do I do it with my friendships? How do I do it with my enemies? For crying out loud, that's a big portion of your life. How you react to people who don't like you. You learn that pretty early on in elementary school. There's going to be some people who don't like you and do mean things to you just because they are bored. So how do you deal with all these different relationships? Well, the first one is, each of them mentions this idea of direction. There is something that they are supposed to do. It's an action-oriented thing. Have I not commanded you? There's something that you are commanded to do. Solomon is told to be strong and courageous and do it. And Paul says to Timothy, for this reason, implying this idea that the reason I'm telling you this is because you're going to have to go in and do something now that I'm going the way of all of the earth. They are going to need courage and strength for the life of a man. Men need direction and men need courage and strength. Be strong and courageous, mentioned both in Joshua's statement, the statement to Joshua and the statement to Solomon. And then Paul tells Timothy, fan into flame that which you've been given, and God's given us a spirit of power. When you talk about having a spirit of power, you're talking about one that's strong and courageous. The third thing is, they have to have protection against dismay and fear. This is the thing that men do not like to talk about, but it is the reality that oftentimes men are the easier of the genders to discourage. We are quite susceptible to the sense that this is not going to work out, and we give up before we start. That's why you will see men, oftentimes one of the signs of immaturity in a man is he'll start a lot of things, but he won't finish those things. It's not that he doesn't understand that he should finish things. It's that he gets started and then it gets harder than what he expected, and there's difficult things and there's roadblocks. You know, we're told as Christians to be faithful unto death. You know, set your eyes on the Lord, just move forward. Well, that's all fine and good, except you're not the only one playing the game, are you? It's not like the road is nice and clear between here and heaven, is it? You have the great adversary at all times throwing darts, fiery darts at you, and putting stumbling blocks and obstacles in your way. And so you get going, and then it's harder than what you expected, and you have a tendency to give up. Or you give up before you start for fear that it might not turn out. That's another aspect that men face, is a tendency to look and say, look, I'd do it if I knew I'd be successful at it. But, you know, they even have T-shirts that say, you know, second place is the first loser. So what we can do is we can say, well, look, unless I'm guaranteed the gold medal, and I have any fear that I'll be anything other than the best, better off to not even play the game than to get in it and not come out first. That's fear, and that's what Paul told Timothy. God didn't give you a spirit of fear, but instead he gave you a spirit of power. And then the last one is endurance. Men need direction, which is a place to go, and then they're going to need endurance to actually get there, because it's not a short journey. Faithful unto death is, for most people, a pretty long process. Though it is true that some people live shorter lives, and they go to meet God sooner than expected. Most people, especially in today's age of medical wonders, I mean, just frankly, medical wonders that you and I live in, you are likely to live a fairly long life. And in that life, you're going to face things that you did not expect to face. And it will be hard, and it will be long, and you cannot even begin to imagine how it will be so. Because God has told you, you don't have the ability to imagine even what will happen tomorrow. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And so these four things are hit upon by all three of these older men who speak to younger men. So they must be important. If we as men are going to be what we ought to be, and the world most definitely needs it. More and more children are growing up in households without fathers. Of those whose parents are divorced, the statistic that came out not that long ago, just a couple years ago, was that about 40% of those whose parents are divorced have not seen their father in a year. These are times where it is quite easy for men to just simply disappear. One of the reasons that we live in a time where women are killing it, by the way, women, we're living in an era that women are being more successful than ever. There are more women going to college than men. And that's not the only indication of success by any means, shape, or form. But more women are going to college and more women are succeeding in college than men. One of the reasons that is because men are giving up. They're quitting. And they are absent from their role. They're absent from their role in the workplace. They're absent from their roles in leadership. They're absent from their roles in the home. Because many times what you'll find is you look at men that have a failure to start. And they're missing one or multiple of these four things that are a part of God's design. And oftentimes when you see a man who is faltering, you know, you see he's reached a point in his life where all of a sudden he's not trucking along the way he was before. Something has hit his countenance. Something has hit his spirit, and he's not as he once was. You'll find that one of these four areas is under attack. He's lost direction. He's not as brave. He's full of dismay or fear, or he's lost endurance. So let's talk about what the Bible says about each of these. And there are applications. I might add, there's applications to be made to all genders here. We're specifically talking about men, but everybody needs direction, everybody needs courage, and everybody needs to not be afraid or dismayed, and everybody needs endurance. But in the context here, we're focused on one gender more than another, but certainly there's a lot to be found for anybody living the Christian life. Direction is that which is worth competing for. It's something that you're willing to fight for. It is something worth conquering. Men in particular need this. And you can see it even in that language. Something to fight for, something... And actually, it's not just something to fight for. It's something to compete for or something to fight. It actually needs an enemy. Something to conquer. You can see masculinity in that. When we think of men being strong, typically what we think of is the hero fighting the enemy, the soldier who goes out to battle to fight the enemy, something to conquer. It's the mountain to climb, to say, I was the first to get here. Overwhelmingly, men are the ones who seek out those sorts of adventurous sorts of things. It is not that women don't, but if you look proportionally, men are certainly much more prone to that sort of desire to conquer, to fight, and to compete. Competition is within the makeup of men, even down to our physical body structures, that men are made so that they run faster and they are able to compete more in athletic competition in a way that is unique to men. And once again, we're talking in generalities. But men need that. And it goes all the way back to the garden. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, it says, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. He didn't put Eve in the garden to work it and to keep it. Now, I have no doubt that at some point in the stay of Adam and Eve there, if it was long enough, Eve would probably have gotten out and done some gardening. But it was Adam's job. This is your task. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over it. That was given to him before sin existed. Because men do need to work. They need something to do, oftentimes to do with their hands. Something that they can say, I made this. I shaped this. I conquered it. And you show me a man who doesn't have something in his life where he can say, this is a thing that I am shaping, molding, or changing, or competing against and defeating. If he doesn't have that direction, you're going to see a man with a sense of lackluster living. He will oftentimes be a very depressed person. One of the easiest ways to fight depression in males in particular, it's true actually across both genders, but in particularly effective with men, is to get him out there doing something. Give him a task where at the end of the task, he can look back and say, oh yeah, I did that. Give him a field to plow. Give him a house to build. And men will do it, they will work with it, they will be tired at the end, but there will be a sense of satisfaction to it. Genesis chapter 12, now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. Men are designed by God to thrive under seeking out the unknown. You think of Abraham and leaving his country and leaving his homeland, and God told him to go and do that. Go start your own life. In Judges chapter 13 and verse 12, it says, Manoah said, now this was Samson's dad. Manoah said, now when your words come true, what is to be the child? That's Samson. What's to be the child's manner of life? And what is his mission? To this day, when two men meet, they'll ask each other's names, and one of the first questions that will come up is, what do you do? What is your mission? This is what his dad asked. Manoah, here the angel visits, and Manoah has a chance to ask some questions. And his question is, what's his manner of life going to be? What's his mission? What's he here for? And I would argue that a man without a mission is the most troublesome causing being on the planet. Young men who have no mission, that's where gangs come from. When you envision in your mind's eye a gang, how many of you envision a bunch of women with guns doing drive-bys? You don't, do you? And there's a reason for that stereotype. You envision men because it is typically young men who are joining gangs. They are more likely to do that. Now, that's true. It's been true in America's history, but it's also true. It's found to be statistically true in other countries. In particular, I'll give you an example that in orphanages of countries like the Ukraine, when that have a policy of once you reach a certain age, we just kick you out of the orphanage, which happens. There's a lot of countries that have that sort of policy. China is that way. Ukraine does. Many others. And so you reach a certain age, 16, 17, sometimes as early as 14 or 13, and they kick you out. And you're on the street with the clothes on your back. The girls, prostitution. 9 times out of 10. Actually, it's higher than that. 9 times out of 10 would actually be a good statistic. That would mean 1 out of 10 girls got out of it. It's not that high. The boys, gangs. Because gangs will give you a mission. It's nefarious. So come join us. We'll all have one purse. We'll go shed blood, but we'll do it as brothers. And that appeals to a young man's heart. That sense of belonging, to something greater than himself. That's purpose. That's direction. That's mission. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. Do you not know that in a race all the runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Though I know that that verse is applicable to all people, that the analogy of the runner running the race, I have found as I talk with men, it has a particular what's the word? It resonates with us. This idea of a race to the finish line and a competition. Philippians chapter 3, verse 13 through 14. Brethren, I count not myself yet to have laid hold, but one thing I do, forgetting the things which are behind and stretching forward to the things which are before, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. That's direction. And within the church, we need to make sure that we are giving our young men direction. Congregations where the young men are simply told, you sit here and once you reach 45, then all of a sudden you could be of use. They don't make it to 45 in the church. They don't make it. Because they believe that there's this feeling that you then have of, well, I'm of no use. I have no meaning or purpose or direction until I reach, you know, this age. And a young guy in his teens and his 20s, 45? You might as well be dead. I mean, let's be honest. When I was 20, I didn't think I'd make 45, and most 20-year-olds I know don't. You read books about war and World War II. You know, we just had the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and the old guy, they talk about the old guy in the platoon, and he's in his 30s. It was a great awakening for me when I was reading through a war book, and I realized the old guy was younger than me. But that's how we think. I think we're kind of hardwired that way because young men do have to storm the beaches of Normandy some days. And so there's kind of this hardwiring a little bit in us that doesn't think about what would happen when I'm 40, when I'm 50, when I'm 60, because if I have to go to war, I can't think like that. I just need to step off and onto that beach and fight where I need at that moment. But I do need direction right now. And every man needs it. Something worth fighting for. And what we need to do is keep in mind that God does provide that direction for men. But if we as the Lord's people don't talk about the things that men can do to serve the Lord, the world will give them things to do and direction. And they will not be good things. But if we can begin to glorify being a father and being a husband and being a man of character so that there is glory in that direction, and there is glory, we just don't talk about it like that enough. If we can begin to teach young men that way of living, to live as a righteous man in a world of wicked, selfish men who are really just boys, if they can begin to think that way, that's what my life is about. I wish to be an elder someday. You don't talk about becoming an elder when you're in your 50s. By then, that die is probably cast. We must talk to our young men about being them. We must talk to our young men about being the leaders of the church before they are. And give them a sense that is something worth fighting for and attainable. That we believe in them. Give them work worth doing. Courage and strength. Courage is that ability to be assertive and, in fact, disagreeable. We normally think of being disagreeable as a negative thing. But, in fact, you cannot be courageous if you're not disagreeable. Courage is to go and do that thing where there's going to be some sort of friction or opposition. It's not courage if everybody's on your side. If everybody is for you and it's all attaboys and it's all great and there's no problems, that doesn't take any courage. It's one of the problems that has been created by a participation trophy sort of mentality in competitive sports. It's because if everybody gets a trophy, then there is a sense that you don't have to muscle up at all. And so nobody learns to be courageous, and nobody thinks and values strength because, hey, I'm going to get an award no matter what. But if we're going to be men, we have to be courageous. 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 9, "Take courage and be men, O Philistines, lest you become slaves of the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight." This verse, this is a great example, by the way. If I just stopped right there and you don't read your Bibles, you might very well just say, "Oh, well, look, the Bible says, take courage and be men." Well, look who is saying that to. Look at the context. "Take courage and be men, O Philistines." This is not God's people saying this. This is actually the heathen nation. The Philistines are the ones at this time, and this was when they went to war against the Israelites, and the Israelites had Eli's sons had brought the Ark of God out, and everybody cheered, and they heard the cheer in the Israelite camp, and the Philistines heard that the Ark of God had come to the camp, and so they got scared. And so this is what the leaders of the Philistines said: "Take courage and be men, O Philistines, lest you become slaves of the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight." Here's why I bring up this verse. Not because it's proof that God says, but even the pagans understood that courage is essential to manliness. Even the pagans understood that if you're going to be a man, and we use that phrase, right? Be a man. What we mean by that is you've got to have some courage. You've got to go towards the bullets, towards the fire. You can't be manly without that. It is a manly thing to hear the bump in the night downstairs and to get out of bed and go check on it while you leave your wife and children. Do not send your wife. You go. You fight. You prepare to die if need be. And then you come back upstairs and say, "Honey, I was ready to die for you. It was the dog." I mean, but you have to take that assertiveness to go and be prepared to be disagreeable. And we also need it as men in the church. Do you know how you fight false doctrine in the church? By being disagreeable. Because false doctrine, we've been told, we've been warned, that false teachers disguise themselves just like Satan does, as an angel of light, as smooth-tongued. They come with a message that everybody likes. It's the itching ears that accumulates teachers according to their own desires. So some guy gets up and he preaches a lesson that everybody likes and it all sounds good, but there's false teaching in it. How do you stop the false teaching? Somebody has to stand up and be disagreeable. Somebody has to stand up and say, "I know that sounds nice, but it's wrong." Just believe in your heart. Believe in your whole heart and confess Christ as your Savior and you'll be saved. It'll be great. And you sure sound disagreeable when you say, "Actually, that won't save you. If you just believe in your heart and confess, you're lost." That sounds disagreeable, doesn't it? But it is still the truth. God requires us to be baptized. That's the pattern we have throughout the Bible. But it's the disagreeable person who stands up against the false teaching. Examples of other kind of warring examples of men. Battle of the Benjamites. But the people, the men of Israel, took courage and again formed the battle line in the same place where they had formed on the first day. Judges chapter 20, this is the battle against the Benjamites. And they had actually been licked in the first battles. And so it says they took courage. And again, they formed the battle line, the men of Israel. It takes courage to get beaten and then stand back up in battle formation. Gideon's army in Judges chapter 7, we remember the whole culling of the herd of the army that got you down to 300 men. We remember the part where there was the drinking of the water. How do you drink it? Do you get on your knees? Do you lap it up like a dog? We remember that part, but actually before that, the first one was, "Whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from Mount Gilead." And then 22,000 of the people returned and 10,000 remained. God did not need a large army to win the victory that day with Gideon. But the first thing he did is get rid of anybody who didn't have the guts to be there. and 22,000 left. Yeah, we continued to narrow it down further with the drinking of the water, but at that point, it was God simply says, well, the army is just too large. But here, the first thing he does, if you're afraid, if you're trembling, go home. Go home. Or Joshua and Caleb. When the report came back from the spies, Caleb quieted the people before Moses and he said, let us go up. Let us go up at once and occupy, for we are well able to overcome it. That's courage. That's strength. That's a man who said, let's go do that thing that we already all agreed we should be doing. But now the spies have come in and you guys are all scared. No, let us go up. Joshua and Caleb were the brave ones. Third thing is that men need protection against dismay and fear. The ability to endure through darkness and failure. I will say that of all of the different things, this is one where women and wives in particular can make a huge, huge impact. Because oftentimes that fear and that sense of dismay, it shows up in our own voices. Where men try things. You try to start your own business. And that doesn't turn out the way you thought. Or you worked really, really hard to get that promotion and then it didn't turn out the way you thought. You got passed up again. And you think this isn't worth it. Or you worked really hard to succeed at something. Maybe you said, I'm going to do this home improvement project. I'm going to do it. How hard could it be to fix plumbing? And so you say, I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to save my family some money. And then at the end of the project, not only was he not able to fix it, but then you had to call in the plumber anyways. And that's the moment where fear and dismay comes in. And what he tells himself is, I'll never do that again. But that's not the right answer, is it? That's not the right answer for a man when he's passed up for promotion to say, well, then I'm just going to stop trying at work. It's not the right answer for a man when he tries to provide for his family by doing those home improvement projects to say, well, since I failed at that one, I'll never try it again. That's not the right answer. And this is where a wife in particular can really come in and make a difference. You can't change a man, not unless he's got diapers. You can't change a man. But you can encourage a good man to be his best self. Proverbs 24, verse 16, for the righteous falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in times of calamity. One of the character traits we're told of a righteous man is that he'll fall down seven times and he gets himself back up. And he doesn't allow that one failure to define him. One of the great problems that we face in life is that nothing ever turns out the way we thought it would. I remember the very first woodworking project I ever did with my dad. My dad was a woodshop teacher. And I made a little tabletop foosball table. And we saw the plans, and it was all laid out, and I saw pictures of what it was going to look like. And I was so excited that I was going to build this thing. And then I remember, you know, you got the little guys that are going to, as you turn the dowels, they're going to kick the ball. Well, we put them on before we put the dowel in the foosball table. And it seemed like a really great idea at the moment, but then when you went to do it, it wasn't going to fit. And I realized we'd done all this work, and now all of a sudden, we were going to have to start all over again. And in that moment, I thought, I will never work with wood again. I'll never do that. That was stupid. I just wasted all that time. I'm not any good at this. But I'm very thankful for my father who said, no, okay, we blew it, but let's figure it out from here. We'll find a way. You see the flaws in your own projects. You see the flaws in your own attempts. But you cannot listen to the voice of failure. Joshua 8, the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear and do not be dismayed. This is not the verse that I showed you before. This is when it came time to fight Ai. And if you remember the book of Joshua, when they got to Ai, Ai was a little, tiny little town. And they were supposed to rout it like they'd routed Jericho. But in fact, they got whooped. And the reason they got whooped was because there was a guy who'd taken some of the spoils from Jericho. And so God didn't give them the victory. And so they went and they dealt with all of that. They fixed, they cleaned house, got back to doing things the way God intended. And now it's time to go fight Ai again. And God tells Joshua, do not fear and do not be dismayed. Why does he say that to him? Because he just fought the battle and lost it. The great leader of Israel had looked the part of the fool as he'd run with his tail between his legs. And God says, no, you go back and you do it again. Do not fear and do not be dismayed. Take all the fighting men with you and arise, go up to Ai. See, I've given into your hand the king of Ai and his people, his city and his land. Do it again. Ezekiel chapter 3, verses 7 through 9, in describing Ezekiel and the man he was going to have to be because the house of Israel would not be willing to listen to him. He says, like emery harder than flint have I made your forehead. Fear them not, nor be dismayed at their looks, for they are a rebellious house. One of the things that men have to learn to do is to be a bit contentious. It sounds counterintuitive because when we talk about being contentious, once again, we think of that as a bad trait. But not always. When you have a football player and he puts on his pads and he pounds his helmet onto his head and he walks out onto the field and he says, I'm going to kill those guys. You say, yep, that's what you do. Right? You beat yourself on the side of the helmet and you get yourself into a battle mentality and then you say, nobody's getting through this. I'm the wall. And it's part of manliness to learn that there are times to be contentious, to be stubborn. But you don't be stubborn with the wrong people. That's our problem. We pick all the wrong times to do it. But when you know you have the right course, you've got the right direction. This is how God has told me to live. You don't give up. Fathers, when you're raising your children, you are going to spank them so much and you will think it will not make any difference and they will not love you at the end and this isn't working and there's a problem with you and I'm going to tell you, you just take them out and you spank them again. I mean, wait till they do something wrong and don't just randomly do it. Why are you doing it, Dad? Because I need to. No, that's not why. But there's a point where you're just, look, this is the course, and it's going to be a hard course, and you have to be prepared to have a forehead like flint and not be dismayed at a rebellious house. Your kids are going to have problems that you're going to have to work them through. And you got to stay the course. Don't give up when it gets hard. And when you go and you work a job and you want that next promotion or you want that place in the career where things are the way you envision it, you got to go out there and you got to hustle and get it. Because there's a couple million other people who want that same thing. You go and interview for a job, you're not the only one who interviewed. So you got to put some work in and you got to expect to get some no's, and that's okay. And surround yourself with people who will tell you, we'll get them next time. And surround yourself with people who say, yeah, I've been there. You just put your head down and you keep going. You drive. 2 Timothy chapter 1, for this reason I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. As far as we can tell, that is a miraculous gift that Paul had given to Timothy. Paul's talking about the gift of the Holy Spirit, that he had miraculous abilities. We don't know what ones Timothy had been given, but it's not surprising that he would. But what we're told is a fascinating thing, which is he has these abilities, and it's whose job to fan them into flame? His job. The spark's from God, but it's your job to give it oxygen. And that's true for all of us. If you're going to live life as a godly man, you better believe there's going to be forces that want to put you out. You are the anomaly. You are the one that the world doesn't want to see about because you don't fit their stereotype. You're the good man who loves his wife and loves his kids. You're the man who averts his eyes and makes a covenant with his eyes so that he's not going to look at any woman that isn't his. You're the one who gets up every morning and works hard to not just provide for himself, but provide for others. You are everything the world hates because you make it hard for them to destroy God's pattern. So you gotta take the spark God's given you. You gotta give it oxygen. You gotta fan it into flame, because they're definitely gonna try and douse you. And the last is endurance. Men have to learn to build our dreams brick by brick. There's a motivational speaker that I listened to one time. I would have listened to him more, but he had a mouth on him, unfortunately. But he goes around the country, and one of the things that he says is he says, I tell young people over and over and over again, stop worrying and analyzing where your life is until you get 20 years down the road. Don't analyze yourself every year. It's kind of like if you're trying to lose weight, one of the first things they'll tell you, don't step on the scale every morning, because it doesn't work that way, does it? You know, I mean, you might be doing well, and then for some insane, weird reason, your weight goes up for no reason. You say, I didn't eat anything. How is it that I gain weight? And that is, don't pay attention every day, right? You work a plan, and then you weigh yourself in intervals that are large enough to actually see marked success. You notice that with the way that Ron spoke this morning about the work in Spokane. On any given day, I can tell you, a guy like Ron, he's a very positive-minded person. But on any given day, he's got failures. And you heard him kind of mention that on the outskirts, right? Some people aren't interested. We found them. You heard him say that? We found them. There's a whole story behind that, isn't there? But it's not the long-term story. The long-term story is they've been there 20 months, and they went from 25 to 40. That's the long-term story. But on any given Sunday, it looked a lot different, didn't it? We got to learn to build our dreams brick by brick, one thing at a time, and stop worrying about whether today I'm happy. Truth is, you're probably not. On any given day, you might not be happy. Watch you stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men. Be strong. This is a characteristic of masculinity that actually we're all told to have. Stand fast in the faith, quit you like men. That is a phrase not just given to men. They're saying, here's a trait that men have that even women should have. Kind of like when Paul talks about the way he treats the church. He says, I was like a nursing mother. Paul's giving and saying, imitate me as I imitate women. So there's sometimes that even men should be nurturing. And patient and kind and gentle. But here is a time where even women should act like men, and the character trait is stand fast. You plant your feet and you don't move. You get yourself a good standing spot, you drop your shoulder and you hold. And you don't analyze every minute as to whether you're successful. You ask any man who's been in a career for any length of time, Steve, how many years were you a steam fitter? 45 years. Every good day a good day? No. You're not just saying that because you know that's the answer I want? Some bad. Every boss you work for, a good boss? Every employee you have, a good employee? Every client, a good client? 45 years, folks. That's how you do it. And that story is true every time. Every time. And this is exactly why young men get into careers, and they get their education, they work real hard, and they go through all the schooling and everything, and then they get into the job and they think, now I've got my dream job. No, you don't. Your dream job doesn't exist. That's the problem, is our dream job is all the parts of a job that we like. And your dream marriage doesn't exist either. No offense, but it doesn't. Because when you dream, you only think of the parts you like, unless it's a nightmare. But I've never heard anyone say, I'm just looking for my nightmare job. I'm just looking for my nightmare marriage. Nobody's looking for that. You're looking for your dream job, your dream marriage, your dream life. And so we envision all the good parts. But those are there, and amongst them are hard things too. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, no temptation is overtaking you that is not common to man. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. We must have endurance, for you have need of endurance, so when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. You notice the reception of the promise comes at the end of the endurance. More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. You notice suffering in Romans chapter 5 produces endurance. Suffering is the only thing in that list of traits that you don't actually create. The suffering is given to you, and then out of the suffering, you get to smelt that down into something greater, like hope. But the first stage of the smelting process of turning suffering into things that are worthwhile and good is endurance. And if you can't do endurance, you don't do any of the other ones. You don't ever get to the other stuff. People with joyous, happy marriages, they don't start there, they get there. They bring their passion with them. They find a way to make it what they want. They build their dreams brick by brick. They raise their children day by day. And they're not all good days, but they're all worthwhile days. In some ways, it really does come down to the story of the three little pigs. The first two guys just tried to cut corners, and there's no way of cutting corners to the life that God intended. So these three things, direction, courage and strength, protection against dismay and fear, and endurance to continue, these are things that men need. And so when David told Solomon, be strong and show yourself a man, that's what it looks like. They are not fancy, but they are at the heart of what makes men complete and happy and fulfilled, and more importantly, godly. The invitation song is number 263. Is thy heart right with God? If you've not obeyed the gospel, or if there's something the church can help you with, please come forward as we stand and sing number 263.